James Bennett arrived at the New York Times Jerusalem Bureau just before the attacks of September the 11th. Over the next 3 years, he reported on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the almost daily tragedies, the twists of international diplomacy, the controversial construction of the barrier between Israelis and Palestinians, and how it has shaped politics, economics, and expectations on all sides. The wall both reflects and shapes what he describes as mutual disillusion. James Bennett is now back in Washington as political reporter for the New York Times before he gets consumed by the presidential campaign. We've invited him here to Studio 3A for an exit interview. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Let's start with that wall. Describe it for us.
Well, people use all kinds of words to describe it. Some call it a wall, some a fence. We took to calling it by a neutral word, barrier, because it's both of these things. It's a network of fencing, concrete wall rising over 25 feet in some places, ditches, barbed wire, security roads, and it's being built by Israel partially along the barrier with the West Bank and partially inside the West Bank. Israel says it's to stop suicide bombers from coming in. Palestinians say it's a political border.
And you've talked to some Israeli officials who privately say, the public explanation is security barrier, but it is a political reality as well.
The reality is it will have political consequences and is already having those consequences for both sides. The message to the Palestinians is you will lose land ultimately if this conflict continues to grind on. There's also, though, at least in the minds of some of the military planners of this, a message to the Israeli settlers that those who are on the wrong side, that is the Palestinian side of the barrier, are going to get left behind.
But there's a more profound aspect of, at least from the Israeli side, that you've written about, and that is that the Israelis only a few years ago were seeing their future as part of a new Middle East. That's no longer the vision.
That's right. I think you can see this barrier as a symbol for what this conflict has done to the relationship between the two peoples. If the Oslo peace process was symbolized by the handshake on the White House lawn between Yasser Arafat and the then Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, I think the barrier is now the symbol for what's happening today, which is that these peoples are separating from each other. The Israelis are trying to turn their back, not really only on the Palestinians, but also on the rest of the Middle East, and reach toward Europe and the United States.
And reach toward Europe and the United States, at least in Europe, Israeli policies are scorned and worse.
Yeah, this is the paradox.
As you look at also the economic effects of the barrier, as well as the political effects on the other side.
Well, and that raises questions about the long-term viability of any Palestinian state or proto-state in that area. Earlier, the notion of an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza was premised on the idea that there would continue to be economic interchange between the Palestinians and the Israelis. With the barrier going up, that kind of interchange, which did promote some understanding between the two peoples, is disappearing. And it's getting harder and harder to see how a Palestinian state in what remains of the West Bank and in Gaza would be economically viable.
The Prime Minister Sharon's plan to withdraw from Gaza and parts of the West Bank has run into considerable difficulties. It may wind up that he will have to have an election before he can put this policy through, if he should win the election. Yet you say even the declaration by Prime Minister Sharon that it is time to leave these areas will have a permanent effect.
I think there's an ideological transformation underway in the Israeli right now. A lot of it is being driven by Ariel Sharon. Some of it is simply a recognition of reality, the demographic reality that Israel is facing. But there's a real change. Ariel Sharon is really the prime architect of the settlement movement. He has now said not only that Israel should leave Gaza, but that it is against Israel's interest to remain in Gaza. That, I think, very strongly undermines the claims made by the settlers who are there and positions them more on the radical fringe of Israeli society.
There is another aspect of this in Israel that I want to talk about. Then we'll talk about the Palestinian side, and that is the increasing distance, as you describe it, between the Israelis and the Jews of the United States, Canada, and Europe.
There's a distinct Israeli identity that's emerging now, has emerged over the course of the last couple of decades, that Israelis themselves will say that they feel a drifting apart, really, that their identity is very distinct from Americans and Europeans. And when Americans visit, they tend to think the place looks very familiar. There's Pizza Hut and McDonald's, and there's a lot of superficial familiarity with what they're used to. But after a while, they realize it really is a foreign country. It's a very different kind of place with its own personality.
Speaking of a very different place, how much at this point interchange is there between Palestinian society and Israeli society across this barrier?
Well, again, it's just diminishing rapidly, partially because of the barrier, partially because of the kind of psychological barrier that's gone up over the last few years. Palestinians and Israelis have less and less experience of each other. There are still a few joint projects, but at the moment, Palestinians tend to experience Israelis, particularly, and what's striking about it is it has a real generational component. Young Palestinians who are growing up now, their notion of Israelis is really formed by their experience with Israeli soldiers at checkpoints or even inside their cities during Israeli incursions. Israeli young people, what they hear about is the Palestinian suicide bombers, very understandably. So these are becoming the real ingrained images in the youth on each side for what the other society represents.
We talked a little bit about Ariel Sharon, the old lion, the prime minister of Israel. Let's talk about the old lion on the other side, Yasser Arafat, still confined largely to his headquarters. His organization, Fatah, seems to be losing support to Hamas daily.
That's right. Over the course of the conflict, Fatah has diminished in popularity. That was happening even before the conflict began. And in fact, some Palestinians think if it weren't for the conflict, Yasser Arafat would have possibly been replaced a long time ago. Hamas is growing in popularity. The ideology of Hamas, at least in Palestinian polling, doesn't appear to be gaining ground. I think what that represents really is frustration with the mismanagement and the corruption in the Palestinian Authority, which is governed by, really dominated by Fatah.
And Arafat, but he would say, look, we've been able to do nothing because of the Israeli occupation. They have shattered every institution. Our police can't enforce the law because they're not allowed to carry weapons.
And that gets a lot of sympathy on the Palestinian side. And there's also a powerful feeling that our leader is under siege. It's not time for us to criticize him. But you're also talking about an educated, very sophisticated population. They knew that there were problems before this conflict began. They knew that their government, their sort of proto-state government, the Palestinian Authority created under Oslo, simply wasn't doing the job that they thought it should have done.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about another result of this construction on the West Bank has been isolation of various parts of the Palestinian community. You wrote a lot about Jenin, both the city and the camp there, and the differences between the two, which I found fascinating, but also the idea that Jenin, no longer part of the West Bank as a whole, but really these days a village unto itself.
You have to see the territories more broadly. It's not just the barrier that's gone up. It's the blockades that have gone up around the Palestinian cities over the course of the last couple of years. There's a pervasive Israeli military presence now in the West Bank, less so in Gaza, but it's become very, very hard for Palestinians to move around, even within the West Bank. And as a result, each of these areas has had to figure out how to survive largely on its own. Jenin, for example, the mayor is traveling around the world, conducting his own foreign policy, in a sense, trying to get help for his city. Gaza seems like 100,000 miles away from the West Bank because there's so little movement back and forth. And there's a great deal of political fragmentation as a result.
If the people in a place like Jenin aren't in a lot of economic contact with the rest of the West Bank, if they're no longer able to cross into Israel to work, what do they do for a living?
Right now, they're surviving on savings, remittances from abroad. Some are still
family members sending money.
Exactly,
to them.
And it used to survive on work in Israel. People work construction jobs, agricultural jobs in Israel. Those jobs are gone now, and they're probably not coming back. The Israelis say that as the barrier is completed, they'll be able to ease some of what they call these internal closures. That is, these blockades around the cities. Palestinians will be able to move a little more freely, or considerably more freely, through some areas of the West Bank. But again, where they're going to find markets, how they're going to develop those markets for their products, these are big unanswered questions.
Our guest is James Bennett, who just wound up 3 years as Middle East correspondent for The New York Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take a call from Robert. Robert joins us on the line from Rochester, New York.
Yes. as your guest mentioned, that once the wall is built, that the settlers will be left on their own. And I find that somewhat questionable, because there are over 225,000 settlers altogether now on the Gaza and West Bank, and over 150 settlements. Even with the dissolution of Gaza and the building of the wall, there's still going to be, 150,000 settlers on the West Bank, maybe 100 settlements. I don't think Israel's going to leave them on their own. As it stands now, there's no way for a viable Palestinian state, and I don't see how Israel is going to leave those settlers to fend for themselves.
Let's get a response from James Bennett.
If I said it was going to leave them on their own, then I misspoke or overstated it. The way that Israel is drawing the barrier, at least according to the military planners who are behind it, they claim that they've figured out a way to hold on to 10 or 11% of the West Bank, and within that 10 or 11, capture 85% or so of the Israeli settlers. That is the overwhelming majority of the 225,000 you're referring to, which is the population of settlers in the West Bank, not including East Jerusalem. So then we're talking about another 20,000-25,000, and what their theory is that those settlers will sort of recognize that they have much less of a future on the Palestinian side of the barrier and will start trickling back into Israel. No, I think the notion that they're going to leave them on their own, not offer them security or any sort of protection, that's pretty far-fetched.
Robert, thank you.
Okay.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the experience of reporting in the Middle East. You wrote in a recent piece in the Sunday Times, it sometimes feels as if this conflict eludes capture by journalism, which must more or less grapple with reality as it finds it. What did you mean by that?
I may have been rationalizing my own performance, but it means that there are times when you're there that it just you accept the premises of the conflict. You accept why people are fighting, and you understand why, but there are times it just seems crazy the way people choose to live there. And we write day after day from there, television day after day from there, and it kind of grinds on and doesn't maybe capture people's attention sometimes. It doesn't. Sometimes you wish there were some way to break through to people, and it may be that I was just musing that maybe satire, something else, could accomplish what journalism often seems to fail at.
As we look at the conflict seems interminable. It also looks sometimes as if it's somehow frozen in stasis. You disagree with that last part of it, I know. You think that the wall is in many ways the most important development there for many years.
Yeah, I think things are changing very fast there now. There's a tremendous amount of political change, really on both sides. Partly it's a consequence of the barrier, also a consequence of the exhaustion with this conflict, and the exhaustion with the solutions both of the left and of the right. We've seen the Oslo approach to creating some sort of interrelationship and understanding fail, come apart, although some people claim it was never really tried. And on the other hand, we've seen now the use of force also fail to bring this thing to an end.
On both sides.
On both sides, or to achieve their aims. And what we're seeing now is great disarray and political chaos on the Palestinian side, and Israel really seizing the initiative and trying to manage the conflict in a new way.
And Israelis, you say, the old mantra used to be peace will lead to security, and now the idea is, well, maybe security will lead to peace.
Right. An approach the Palestinians completely challenge. The Palestinians feel the only way there can be peace is if they're given a real substantial political horizon, and that is a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza with its capital in Jerusalem. Ariel Sharon believes that the situation is simply too hot, the division is too great, people hate each other too much, and he wants to postpone discussion of those issues for 10, 12 years longer if possible.
Can the barrier, and I'm afraid we just have a few seconds left, but can the barrier accomplish that goal?
Well, he sees it as one tool towards accomplishing it. The other has been enlisting the United States as emphatically as he can on his side.
James Bennett, a reporter for The New York Times, now based in Washington, D.C., talking to us about his 3 years as Middle East Bureau Chief for The New York Times. Thanks very much, and, well, we hope your next assignment is less tumultuous than your previous one.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, Ira Flatow will be here with Science Friday. We'll see you Monday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.